You're listening to Save My City, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Tony Mangini.
Well, thanks for joining us. Thrilled today to be joined by Lynn Markland. Lynn is not only the city manager in Fenton, but he's also the current president of the Michigan Municipal Executives. So thanks for joining me.
Hi, Tony. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So just real quick, why don't we explain to folks what are the Michigan Municipal Executives and sort of what's your role with that organization?
So the Michigan Municipal Executives is the association for city managers, township managers, village managers, county administrators, all those folks who are the senior executive level positions in local government in the state of Michigan.
Cool. So this is an issue when we talk about municipal finance and some of the challenges that we're having, obviously an issue near and dear to the heart of you and the whole organization.
Right. It's an issue that impacts everybody and everybody that's in our organization and all of their communities.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about it just from the profession or on a statewide basis, that's something that I think that people sometimes don't understand, right? I think they think this is a localized issue. And some of the stories you see are just about a particular community. I know we're going to talk in a minute about some articles you were just in the paper recently about this stuff, but it's a much bigger issue. I mean, this is something impacting Right. Everybody.
Yeah, local residents seem to think it's just a local issue, and it's really something that's impacted the entire state. It's been a continued disinvestment of local government throughout the whole state of Michigan, and it's negatively impacted all of us, whether it's been roads, revenue sharing, any of those financial issues, It's impacted everybody.
Yeah, you're so right. You know, before we started taping, you were sharing with me that you've been having some good times in Fenton recently and values are rising, and your reward for that was losing millage capacity, which, again, is something I think people don't understand. Talk about that. Explain that to folks.
So we've, since during the recession, we made some decisions to make plans to strategically recover. And so we implemented those, and we've been pretty successful in our recovery. We've had new development in the downtown area, several new buildings, a four-story building, three-story building, two-story, all kinds of different types of progress with new businesses, new restaurants. Downtown's really become a dining destination. And we've actually had some other commercial development in other parts of the community where someone took the old Kmart store and turned it into several different stores. Some other commercial establishments like Big Boy Pizza or Pizza Hut were actually demolished, and somebody built an entire new strip mall there. Had about 70 to 100 new homes built in the last couple of years. Actually, I think around 70 last year. And so the community looks really successful. We've been doing very well. But as the saying goes, no good deed goes unpunished. Because of our success, we've actually lost half a mil in our ability to levy taxes, And that's impacting our general fund.
And so that's when we talk about a healthy rollback, that's what you're describing, is you see this growth, You're having success as a community, and the reward is we're going to roll your millage rates back so you don't get to enjoy the fruits of your labor, so to speak.
Yeah, you don't get to enjoy the financial rewards for the success. I mean, not personally, but the community doesn't get to enjoy that. We don't get to use those funds to reinvest in the community to make things happen.
Mm. You know, something else that struck me, you're describing a project, great reuse, old Kmart building, and we're doing things. And if you're an average resident, you probably look at that and go, this is great, look at all this positive activity in the community, and you probably extrapolate from that, this must be a great boon to the city in their ability to offer services. And the reality is you probably get almost nothing out of that.
Oh, and that's actually right. We get a lot of comments from people that they love the progress that we're making, the things that are going on downtown, the new stores, but they, the new restaurants, they're enjoying all that. They expect that we're doing very well. In fact, I've had comments from people saying, boy, the city must be doing really well, you know. And the fact is our revenue is still down from where it was prior to the recession.
It's
in
amazing.
Fact, our property tax revenue is about $800,000 less today than it was 10 years ago.
That's amazing. I was just looking at a statewide stat, and in 2017, taxable values were lower than they were in 2006 statewide. And of course, that bakes in some places that didn't have some of the recession impacts, obviously, as well as some of those that had greater impacts. But when you think of that, that's sort of the average place. It's amazing people are even operating.
Right. And, you know, our cost to operate has not gone down. We did make some changes during the recession, laid off a couple of employees, and actually through retirement didn't replace some people. But that left us short-staffed in a number of areas, including areas like our public works department, police department. We've actually caught up to almost where we were with the police department. We're trying to backfill the DPW as we go along.
Pardon me? In terms of staffing levels, you mean?
In terms of staffing levels, right. And so we are getting back as far as being able to operate, but we're really not able to make the long-term investments for the future that we need to do and improve community or neighborhoods.
So, you know, and this is the other thing, too, that when you say to someone who's not in our world, they just shake their head and go, that can't be right what you're saying. But there's a complete disconnect between service demands and revenue generation. So, you describe some things that are positive, but those all have service requirements associated
Correct.
With those. We've built this model now that doesn't allow you to match those revenues that a place like that might generate to provide the services that they're going to demand. So a complete disconnect and service demands rising, financial resources not matching. And so then they look at you and go, you know, Lynn, you're not doing a good job. You got to be smarter with the money. You know, it's like you just want to scream sometimes when you're dealing with this stuff.
It is frustrating, especially when, you know, the community is successful from a lot of other aspects. And then you look at the balance sheet and the things you couldn't do that you would like to do, things that people still have concerns about that you'd like to be able to solve their problems, such as you'd like to do more sidewalk in the neighborhoods, you'd like to have better streets, infrastructure improvements, all those types of things that you're not able to do that you used to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
People see it at the surface. They don't see the underground infrastructure because...
Right.
They drive over it every day, but they don't pay a lot of attention to it.
Well, even the things that they might see, like a fire truck or a police car. I happened to be reading an email chain just last week.
Right.
And they were talking about, I think we're going to take our police fleet and try to go from 100,000 miles to 120,000 miles before we replace those things. And when you think about what you're asking those vehicles to do, that might be one thing if you're driving back and forth to work every day.
Right.
But knowing the demands you place on emergency response vehicles, you can't afford a breakdown.
Yeah, especially police vehicles because those are used for high-speed pursuit. They're actually a part of the equipment that each officer uses every day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're having issues, mechanical issues or other issues with the vehicle, that really impacts the ability of the police to be able to respond, which obviously impacts the community.
You know, and you take those day-to-day things, right, which we all think about. I was talking with one of your colleagues who are named nameless at the moment, but they were talking about when you think about specialized equipment, and this particular community was up north, so a little bit more remote, but not out in the middle of nowhere. And they were saying the closest sort of special response vehicle was 60 miles away. The particular piece of equipment has a top speed of 40 miles an hour, and it takes 2 hours for someone to respond to even get to that equipment. So you're basically a half a day or more, if you have an emergency situation saying, I need this particular piece of equipment before you're able to respond to that. If you put that in the context of an emergency response, you realize how unacceptable something like that is. And these are the types of things that we're seeing when we don't have the appropriate funding that you sort of go to bed every night hoping and praying that I don't have a problem that's going to, you know, necessitate that type of response.
Well, it's sort of like a rubber band, right? I mean, you're trying to stretch your resources to get the best value that you can out of them, but we're really sort of at a point where the rubber band, if you keep stretching the rubber band, eventually it breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And the finance model for local government is really broken.
Absolutely. Or it's like that rubber band you find in my grandma's house. It doesn't break, but doesn't have any elasticity left. It's just like laying there. That's kind of where we find ourselves. So I want to talk a little bit about recently you had a couple of articles run in your local paper. Why don't you talk to us about what was in there and the type of topics you're talking about.
So a local reporter called me up and wanted to do a story about where the city's money goes. So I thought it would be interesting to share a lot more information with that reporter, such as where we actually get our revenue and how our revenue is today compared to where it was 10 years ago. And so we have those types of graphics charts in our city budget. So I made some, I scanned those in, sent them to her through her email, and she was actually shocked to find out how much our revenue has been impacted over the last 10 years. And I don't think, that's one thing I don't think we do a very good job of, is telling people our story about how much revenue we've lost over the last many years. And I think most people take the services that we give, that we actually provide, for granted, and don't really start to think about how we're actually doing it and how we're financially able to afford it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, I think in some ways you talk about, what was the phrase you used about not getting the revenue? You're a victim of your own success or something like that.
Yeah, it's like no good deed goes unpunished.
That was it, I'm sorry.
You know, you are a victim of your own success. As you become more successful, you actually lose the ability to levy as much millage. So mm-hmm. you're actually, in some cases, going backwards in finance rather than going forward.
Well, where I was going to go with that is, I think about it in the context, we were just talking about police cars. If I'm a resident who calls for police and they show up at my house, police protection is A1, I'm happy, might even send a note to you and say, want to thank you for this great, you know, response by your professional, you know, public safety department. What they don't know is the guy rolled up in a car with 118,000 miles on it. We haven't done some of the other maintenance things. And if this had gone wrong, we might not have been able to provide the type of response.
Yeah, all they care is that the guy's at their door. They don't, or that the police officer's at their door. They don't care if the car has 118,000 miles on it or 150,000 miles on it. But they don't stop to think that, geez, if it has that many miles, maybe they're not going to be able to respond.
And when you think about the story sometimes, because the lead story on the news would be Fenton failed to respond to this in a timely manner and something bad happened, right? That's the lead story.
Right.
The story about, you know, the other doesn't get told very well. And so it's great, you know, when someone takes the opportunity to relate these things. And I think that's something that's so important, is finding this relatability about this, because people don't understand and don't connect the dots between the revenue structure, the broken system that we're dealing with here, and our ability to provide those services that not just they want, that businesses want, you know, attract and retain people. Those are all connected.
Yeah, she was, the reporter was particularly surprised when she saw that our taxable value, or the property tax revenue, I should say, is actually property taxable value is still lower than it was too. But the property tax revenue is about $800,000 less today than it was 10 years ago. And she was shocked at that, because she does live in the community. And she hasn't really noticed the really change in the level of services. So we worked very hard not to let that happen. But there's really a lot of things we could have done with parks, neighborhoods, that we haven't been able to do. We also used to give, you know, road funding's been an issue for a very long time. And we used to provide about a mill's worth of revenue to roads from the general fund. And we quit doing that several years ago because we just couldn't no longer afford to do that and operate on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. You know, we're recording this actually at our Capitol conference right now. And yesterday the governor spoke to us about her proposal for 45 cents. And, you know, that sends some people to a particular position. Maybe it's like, yay, great. Or maybe it's like, are you crazy or whatever. But I don't know how anyone can dispute that we don't have enough money to address these things. There was a slide actually that I've seen before, but she used it yesterday talking about, you know, the state budget's $60 billion with a B dollars, but the amount of discretionary money is $10 billion. And if the need's anywhere near $2.5 billion, and I think that might even be light, if anyone really thinks that there's an extra 2.5 in fat in a $10 billion budget after the economic times that we've endured here, they got to sit me down and talk to me about this. And I've been doing this for 30 years. It's impossible to think that that's the case. But yet, in the same breath, people will complain the roads are terrible, but I want to pay for them. I don't know. I have any great insight on that? Or, you know, you hear the same types of things in locally or you know, but something
so
we got to deal
actually,
with.
Actually, I believe the public in our community, we went through a millage ballot issue back in November. We figured out that we need about $2 million a year to get our roads, for our 10-year program, to get our roads up to speed, up to the right repairs that they should be in, condition that they should be in. So we put together a whole package, and we started doing community forums. Had a lot of people out to the. It was a little difficult to get people out to a meeting, but those that did come out came in against it, and they left in favor of it. I think they're really starting to get
the
message.
What's the magic thing you said there, Len?
Well, I think it wasn't one thing. We showed them where how much money we get, where the money goes, and we showed them what it costs to do a road, a mile of road. We showed them what it costs to do a bridge. We have done a bridge in the last few years, so that was something they could relate to. We have done some of the major streets that we have received federal funds for. And a lot of people see you do some roads and they don't understand why you're not doing their local neighborhood street.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so some federal aid eligible roads are eligible for federal dollars. And the major roads that we've done have had money from Federal Highway Administration to be able to do those roads because they're federal aid eligible. And so people were wondering why we were doing those roads instead of theirs. And so they started to understand that message, too. And I kind of look at the road conditions as I call it an open door policy. If you don't think we have bad roads, open your front door and take a look. because a lot of neighborhoods, at least in our community, have a difficult time even driving down the road. The roads, the potholes are holding themselves together. This time of year, the potholes or the patches are popping out, and it just creates a really bad condition for you to even drive down your own street.
You know, it's amazing in a way to me that people don't take a pause for a second and say, that pothole in front of my house impacts the value of my house, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, if I was driving down a street, it was well maintained and I felt good about it. I think it sends a message about the community at large. And, you know, those places tend to have greater values. We're sort of working against ourselves. Michigan's become a place where cheapest means the same as best. And those are two different things. It's really starting to impact us. And we talk about this a lot. If we don't start dealing with this stuff really soon, we're going to go past the point of no return. And then it'll be almost a problem so big we can't solve.
Yeah.
We got to take some time, make those investments so that we can be the kind of place that can attract and retain
people.
So
I think we've been in a race to the bottom for a number of years here in Michigan, and I think we've actually won. You know, we're in the bottom category of a lot of funding issues, and roads are one of those. Education's another, local government's another. We've disinvested for many years, and we won the race to the bottom. I think it's now our opportunity to turn that around, and because I think people are finally starting to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to impact them. The economy's better, so they're more receptive to that type of information and ideas. So I think that, you know, like I experienced, well, 10 years ago, we tried to do a millage election for roads, and it was less mills, and it got defeated 80-20. This time, back in November, we didn't win the election as far as the millage goes, but what did happen is we had a 55-45 for a lot more mills. So it tells me that people are starting to get the message and they do understand it. And if you take a look at it, even though it looks like we lost by 10%, we only lost by 6%. Because 6% of the people would have voted the other direction, it would have been 51-49.
Right.
So I think we really did a good job in getting the message out to people. It's just they were a little bit confused by the gubernatorial race where both sides were talking about roads and how the state was going to step up the plate with money. So I think some people voted against it, waiting to see what the state would do.
Well, I think, too, you know, the misinformation is easy. The no tax message is easy. I think the harder message is this is an issue we've got to step up and deal with. And the other thing, which is harder to convey, but I think people are starting to realize, and it's something you just said, every year we put it off, it costs more. You know, it's like trying to get back in shape. I haven't been in the gym in 10 years. Putting it off till tomorrow ain't going to make it any better, right? I'm that much farther away from what I need to be doing. And that's where we're at. I heard an interesting statistic in our board meeting the other day. I think you might have been in the room for it as well. Florida, who doesn't have winters to speak of, Almost the same number of roads, similar, you know, in terms of, in, as far as that goes. It's spending over $6 billion a year on roads, and we're currently spending $1.5 billion. So even with the $2.5 billion we're talking about, we'd still be lagging Florida by a couple billion dollars.
I was really shocked by that. And I think most people, a lot of people in Michigan anyways, go to Florida for spring break, right? Mm-hmm. And they come back and say, wow, their roads are great down there. Well, it's great to have the information to be able to tell them the story about why their roads are so great. They spend a lot more money than we do on on roads. And I think getting that message out to people makes a difference.
Absolutely. If you do that drive, and I've done it many times, the whole way down you say that to yourself. At least you're for in our world, you do. It's like Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky. The whole way down you're kind of, and I realize my geography was messed up there for a second, but every place you go has got a better road than us. We can't win that game. And, you know, I'm going to bring that whole thing back to just sort of a competitiveness. Fenton, all the communities in Michigan are trying to compete not just with each other, which I actually think is the loser for all of us.
I agree.
But we're trying to compete with Ohio and Indiana to get folks here. We need to get people, new businesses coming to Michigan. If a job leaves Fenton and, you know, goes to Flint or vice versa, that's not a win
for anybody, right?
And so we got to get more people coming back. And to do that, we've got to make all of these strategic investments across all the things that matter to these folks. You talked about education and roads. Those are all real. And local government. As you point out, we are dead last when it comes to our change in funding on this stuff. And schools have actually co-opted that soundbite because it resonates and it's true. Being dead last isn't going to get us home in any way, shape, or form.
Right. As you know, we're not just competing through the Great Lakes region. We're competing nationally, and we're competing globally too, for a lot of these new companies, startups, all those that are expanding as well. I mean, if you saw just the recent last year of Amazon looking for a second world headquarters, they weren't just looking in the United States; they were looking globally.
Mm-hmm.
They considered, I think they might. They were, at least in the last part of it, they were still considering Toronto, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in the United States. So we're competing globally for these jobs and for talent. And you can't get there when you're disinvesting in your state.
Well, you know, Amazon, there's certain days you go to work and you don't know whether to cry, scream, or go do something else. And when Amazon came out with the list of things they were looking for was one of those days for me because in some ways, it was a validation of all the things we've been saying. But at the same time, it was a very frustrating validation because had we been for the last decade making those types of investments, who knows?
Right.
Maybe we'd be in the game.
But it also gives us a checklist.
It does. It's a checklist we've been telling everybody for a decade plus.
Absolutely.
And so you kind of wonder how different would the world be if we'd had made some of those strategic investments along the way. Maybe we could have prevailed in an opportunity like that. But instead, I laughed that, you know, we put ourselves in the game in a way because we were so outgunned and saying, well, now we'll do those things isn't going to get win that day. We've got to make those investments. And until we realize that, I think we're going to continue to, you know, lead our way to the bottom. And that's not what
we
do. Yeah,
I kind of felt the same way when we put ourselves in the game, too. But then reflecting on it, if we hadn't put ourselves in a game, we wouldn't know where we really are and where we really need to be. So
I agree with
that. It really gave us an opportunity to not really compete as much, but actually find out where we are in the competition.
I agree, but I sort of, you know, I think I even wrote an article about this. To me, it felt like that kid that heard baseball tryouts are today and said, Where's that my mitt, you know? And he got his old plastic mitt out that he got when he was six, and he shows up at, you know, the high school baseball tryouts, and he's the first round cut, and he's going, but I tried hard, coach. Like, well, you know, I don't get it. I kind of felt that's how we were for that. I know we had to go
that's
try.
That's sometimes an eye-opening experience, though.
I agree.
You know, so they realize how far, what they need to do to get there.
Yeah, had to try. I agree. We had to try for sure.
Yeah.
So, Lynn, I really appreciate you coming out. I got to do a shameless plug, though. You know, he talked about the dining experience in Fenton. They have really exploded a lot, and I'm going to give a plug for my favorite, but I can't remember the name of it. It's a barbecue place, and it's in a gas station, and the barbecue is
Beale
amazing.
Beale Street. It's out by 23. First time I went there, I went, why are you taking me here? I walked in, it was great.
I had the same reaction. We were actually in your town for a baseball tournament. I'm a big baseball guy, and whole team's always looking for a place to go. And somebody said, we found this place, Beale Street. We're going to go there, and the whole team pulled into the gas station. And we all looked at each other and said, what are we doing? And walked in and had one of the most amazing meals we've ever had.
They do fantastic barbecue there, and they're really good local people, too.
Yeah, they were awesome. And I know there's a lot more places, but that's one of my favorites because it's the last place you'd expect to walk in and get just such an amazing
meal.
That's
what makes it special.
Yeah, it kind of is in a way. So, again, thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your insight on this stuff.
Keep fighting the good fight. Thank you, Tony.
Appreciate you having me. This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.